This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow. That would be a little difficult, considering the circumstances. I will definitely be within computer range. But maybe not the rest of it. So it's been a good week. It's Thursday today. It is whatever today is, the 17th. And all is well. All is well. It is episode 538, I think. And I have notes. But I kind of had to scramble around last night to find something. And that might mean that I'm supposed to do something else. So I do have something I need to talk my way through. And I may just use this podcast to talk my way through it again. I shared it with my buddy that I had breakfast with this morning. And he listened kindly. Didn't have any criticisms of it. Didn't have any additional things necessarily he wanted to add to it. So maybe I'll just talk my way through it again. we'll get to that in a minute. It's been a good week. All is well. Good at work. Got a lot of good things accomplished. Ramping up for this new sprint methodology, and that all seems to be going fine. And so was able to put some planning down. We're going to do more planning on Monday. Reviewed some code that I had parked a couple of years ago. The code looks good. Trying to figure out where in the world I was with that code, but that was good. Just before I left, they're moving some reports from one report server to another. And there were some reports that apparently I did 10 years ago. 10 years ago. So the guy who's working on moving the reports, he said, "Do you recognize these?" He said, "They're named as our naming convention," and that kind of stuff. And I was like, "Man, those don't ring a bell at all." And so then we dug down into the stored procedures that supply the data. Sure enough, my name's on it. It's like, "Oop, sorry." I don't know what those do. So he was going to go check and see who had permissions on it. Oh, you know. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's coming back now. Yes. Okay. He'll find out because he'll see who has permissions on it and then he'll go from there. So that's all good. All is well there. It's good. It's good. It's good. Friday was just a normal Friday, just crazy t-shirt, crazy socks, skinny jeans. I kind of dropped the ball this weekend because I saw that they were talking a lot about the Apollo moon landing and all that kind of stuff, but I was not paying attention. I don't know how I missed this, that coming up on Saturday is the 20th anniversary of the moon landing and the walk on the moon, if you count American time. I was talking to a friend about this, and she was saying, yeah, she said, "I don't understand. They landed on the moon on the 20th, and then, but they're saying it actually happened on the 21st. Well, I think it's if you're on Greenwich Mean Time or if you're on, you know, American time. And as far as I'm concerned, we're on American time. So, because America put the people up there. And it's funny because I was just completely clueless on that, so I started scrambling around trying to find a t-shirt, and I found some cool t-shirts, but by that time it's too late, because they do the custom print on the t-shirts now. They just do them one at a time, and then package them up for you, and by the time they get them made, even with prime shipping, it's too late. They were saying, "It'll be here Monday," it's too late! So I'm hoping to find a shop on Saturday that has a Apollo 11 t-shirt on it. We'll see. We'll see how that little adventure works out. I do, surprisingly enough, I do have some socks I could already use for this. I have some knee-high socks that have rocket ships on them, and then I have some regular crew-length socks that my daughter got me at one point that have astronauts on them. So, in spacesuits. So, you know, I just got to find a t-shirt. But we'll figure that out. It'll be fine. I'm not going to do grocery shopping tomorrow. I'll do that on Saturday. And so I've got a little extra time to work it out, probably Saturday afternoon. So it'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll figure it out. It'll be fine. The writing's going fine. I'm keeping up with the schedule. It's going to be a little bit of a challenge this week to get my 10,000 words in. At this point, I'm like 255 words down, which is nothing for me to make up. 255 words is just like, I can blather for 255 words, so that's no problem. But I'm going to be losing some time on Friday and on Saturday, so we'll see. I think I'm still fine on schedule, even if I get a little behind. It's fine. We're fine. But I am in an interesting part because this book introduces a new character and I don't have that character's voice yet. I'm still working on that voice, and it's really an interesting challenge, this particular character. It's just an interesting challenge. So I may just have to write it all out and then keep getting farther into the book. And sometimes that happens. You know, I just don't have it at the beginning. And then as the characters are in different circumstances, they start getting more fleshed out. And then I realize where I should have been. And so then I go back and rewrite some of that stuff. So it'll be, you know, it'll be fine. It'll all work out. It's just, right now, there is that tension of, I don't really know who this character is yet. I'm still tweaking. I started out in one spot, and I've tweaked a little bit, and I'm still not there. I can feel it. It's just not, it's not settled. But that's, you know, that's actually part of what I'm working out as well. The book this time, the parable in the book this time, is the parable for this book. I know that because of where we are in the poem. Right now in the poem, in the Second Coming, which is the poem that I'm using as the emotional backbone for this series of 24 books that I'm working on. Book 11, which is what I'm on now, that line from the poem, The Second Coming by Yeats, it's basically the third line in on the second stanza. So the second stanza begins, surely some revelation is at hand. That was the first line for book 9. Surely the second coming is at hand. That was the line for book 10. And then for book 11, it's the second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. So there is inherent in that this idea of something unexpected. And of course, I've modeled the book very much around something unexpected. And in fact, the title of the book is An Unexpected Hour. So if you look through the parables and you try to find a parable that has something to do with that, fairly quickly you settle on the parable that includes Jesus saying, for in an hour you expect not, you know, the Son of Man shall appear. At least I think that's the parable that I'm in. But then you look more into that parable, and maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe I need to go back and look. No, I think it's in there. I think it's at, see, now I have to find out. So now I'm driving and I'm looking at my phone. Just a second. It's Luke 12, which is important because I'm actually taking a little bit broader view in this particular parable, because in this particular parable, it's easy to get upside down on it if you're not careful about the context. Yeah. So, the parable is the parable of the waiting servants. And the idea is, Jesus says, look, you need to stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. You know, basically, stay alert. Be like men who are waiting for their master to come. So, and he's coming home from the wedding feast. Be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast. You don't know when he's coming back because in the times, it was ancient Israel times. It's not really, is it ancient Israel? Anyways, in the times of the New Testament, wedding feasts went on for days. So you were never really sure when people were coming back from them, just like you were never really sure when the bridegroom was going to show up, which is what the parable of the seven wise and seven foolish, five wise, five foolish virgins was all about. Because you were supposed to be, it's another parable about being ready. The five foolish virgins didn't plan ahead. They didn't bring extra oil. They didn't say, I wonder if the master is delayed. Maybe we should do something to where we're prepared. And so in this parable, Jesus is talking about servants who are waiting for their master to come home. And he's saying, you need to be ready for action. You need to be dressed, ready to go. And that, I'm reading that from the ESV, and there might be a little translation difficulty there. Because I think the original is really talking about, he says, have your loins girded. And that was an image. That was an image that Israelis, the Hebrews, would have known was be ready for action. Ready to go. Because you don't know. You don't know when the master is going to be returning. And specifically, you don't know when the master might be returning from the wedding feast. He might even, the parable says, it might be the second or third hour. And then as part of that, Jesus also says, you know, for you've got to understand that if the master knew when the thief was breaking in, that he would have not let his house be broken into. And there's an interesting analogy there, because in these times, in biblical times, houses were made out of adobe, and so you could have your door locked and barred all you wanted, but thieves would actually quietly dig in the side of a wall. So, you know, the only way really you could stop that is to just stay up all night. And then, to cap this all off, Jesus said, you must be ready as well. And it's interesting, he comes right out of that thief. He said, but know this, that if the master of the house had known at the hour the thief was coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. He would not have left his house to be broken into. You must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. And so that's why I picked this parable, because it's the unexpected hour. And bound up in this parable, and I'm just talking my way through this, so I don't know where we're going to land with this, but I'm just talking my way through this. Because sometimes just in the process of talking through, something occurs. I mean, one of the things that occurs to me even as I'm talking about this is this is very much a parable about arrival. And Jesus himself talks about how his coming, how his arrival will be like a thief in the night. It'll be an unexpected arrival. And against this idea of the unexpected arrival, the unexpected event, Jesus is saying, be dressed, be ready, be aware. And he doesn't couch this in any terms where we get the impression that we might have a chance of knowing when this was going to happen. Because he says nonchalantly, you know, obviously the master of the house didn't know when the thief was coming. Because if he would, he would not have left to let his house be broken into. And in the same way, you see in the parable of the ten virgins, five wise, five foolish, they had no idea when the bridegroom was coming. And also in this parable, Jesus is talking about, again, the master coming home from a wedding, and you don't know when he's going to arrive. And Jesus says, be ready. Be ready. Have your loins girded up. Be watchful. Be ready. And that's it's an interesting thing, because if Jesus is specifically talking about you're ready to stop the unexpected from occurring, then it becomes an almost impossible task. Because he says if the master would have known when the thief was coming, he would not have left to let his house be broken into. But you have to leave your house sometime. If you're going to conduct life, you leave your house sometime. You have to sleep sometime. So I don't think it makes sense to assume that what Jesus is talking about is a continuous wakefulness. I'm getting my mail, one moment. I don't think he's talking about a continuous wakefulness. I think he's talking about something different than that. And I don't think it becomes completely clear that Jesus is talking about something different from that, unless you look at the other parables that are in the same chapter. And certainly in the narrative of the chapter, things are built in a way that it's easy to assume that the chapter is cascading. Oh, you know what? I was supposed to get some gas and I didn't do it. That's fine. We'll do that later. It's easy to assume that all of the parables are cascading through Luke 12. That it's part of one continuous dialogue. Whether that was or not, or whether Luke was putting together these... That's my air compressor on my air shocks in the back. There it goes. Whether Luke put together these parables to try to give the parable of the waiting servant some kind of context, You know, we won't know till we get to heaven and talk to Luke about that. But it's interesting that this parable is then followed by another parable that's similar. It's about a servant. It's about a master. It's about an arrival. But it has a different flavor to the waiting. Because in that parable, the parable of the faithful servant, what we see is that Jesus tells us that a master is going on a journey, and so he puts a servant in charge of his household. He leaves, and Jesus talks about how well and good it will be if when the master returns, he finds that servant faithful. But he also says, you know, that if he doesn't find that servant faithful, but if the servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat the male and female servants, and to eat and to drink and get drunk, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect and at an hour he does not know. And the master will cut the servant to pieces and put him with the unfaithful. And so in that context of being watchful and being faithful, it's not a matter of trying to stay up all night or trying to guard the house all night, never leave the house because there is an arrival that's unexpected. It's a matter of conducting yourself in a faithful way, in a way that is in a state of preparedness. And I think if you look at the two parables that precede this parable, you find even more context for this parable. Because the one that precedes the one that precedes this one, the waiting servant, is the parable of the rich fool. And what we see here is, in context, this rich man who believes himself to be a rich man, who believes himself to be in control of his environment, who believes himself able to set the agenda of his life. Because he says, look, I am increased in goods and I am at ease. What am I going to do with all of my extra? Well, I'll just pull down my barns and I'll build bigger barns. And then I'll say, soul, take thine ease. You've goods for many years. So there is this looking to self and to the satisfaction of self using the resources that he has to secure a future that is inwardly pointed, to expect, to have this expectation that he will know exactly how everything is going to go. Then the parable that comes next is the parable of the lilies of the field and the birds. And Jesus says, don't you know that a sparrow is sold for practically nothing and that God understands when one falls? And can't you see the flowers, the wildflowers, and how beautiful they are? And in that parable, then, Jesus admonishes us to not be worried about the future. So he says, for all the nations of the world seek after these things. Well, let me back up a little bit. So he says, but if God so clothes the grass which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried. For all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Now, it's interesting because this parable goes on, fear not, little flock, For it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give to the needy, provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there is your heart also. And that's a challenging verse. It is absolutely true, but it is a challenging verse because I don't think there's any way to interpret that without just saying that Jesus is saying, look, you have to decide where you're going to put your heart. And really, you should put your heart on heaven. You should put your heart on the kingdom. And you should just strip everything else away. And I am going to use that parable at some point because that parable flies in the face of everything we know in America. And that's not the parable for this book. But again, it speaks, I think, to this idea of throwing off expectation, throwing off the idea that I'm in control of my future, and embracing the idea that God is in control of my future and that He has me in His hands. And it was interesting, this week we didn't do a major rollout, but we did a rollout. You know, and it's code that people are depending on to get missionaries their money. And so that's always a little bit stressful is a little bit of a strong of a word. It is always a little bit focusing for me because I'm happy when we get through it and everything seems to be okay. Because you just never know with technology. We had done some updates to systems and this was our first deploy after that. And you just hope that everything's going to go fine, you know. And it did. It did. But in the midst of all that, what helped me get on top of that potential pressure was the fact that I was reminding myself of the fact that, you know, God is in control. You're not really in control of your future. Because either you're going to live like you're in control of your future or you're going to live like God is in control of the future. And I think that is what really becomes the yardstick for an understanding of the parable of the waiting servants. That what Jesus is saying is, you know, be mindful. Be mindful of the fact that there is the unexpected that can happen. And one of the ways that we deal with the unexpected is then we try to plan more and we try to secure our future and we try to ratchet everything down. And then we try to take some comfort in that. But the future is unexpected. The future will always be unexpected. People like to hear me say, you know, but I mean, planning, good planning is important. We all go, yeah, good planning is important. And I'm a planner. There's no, oh yeah, I like to plan. I like to, you know. But it's so easy to let that planning then be where you put your trust. And I think we have to constantly remind ourselves, we have to constantly gird our loins, prepare our minds, be watchful that we don't put our confidence in our own planning. Because no matter how much planning we do, unexpected things happen. And I think what Jesus is really saying here is that our confidence can never be in our own devices, or it shouldn't be. He makes that point very clear in the parable of the rich young ruler, because that's what the rich young ruler did. His confidence for the future was in his own devices. And that's what Jesus chides against in the parable of the sparrows and the wildflowers. And that's why he says, just get rid of your possessions. That's really the best path. Just get rid of everything. Because that will relieve you of having confidence in your planning and in your possessions and in your ability to control the future, your perceived ability to control the future. If you have nothing, you know you can't control the future, which is really what the truth is. And maybe then what Jesus is really saying in the parable of the waiting servant is, recognize that the unexpected is going to occur, that you have no control over the future. And just be ready. Rid yourself of the expectations of what you want to happen. Just be ready. When things happen, just go with it. And remember, thankfully, that the one who holds the future, the one who knows the future, has you in his hands. He has you in his focus. And nothing is going to overtake you that he has not already seen. Gets back to my little saying that I need to remind myself more often, that he stands in the future. We are all toddlers learning to walk in eternity. But he stands in the future with his arms stretched towards us, whispering sweet words of encouragement. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.